819 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Mark Howard along with Blaine Bishop. Kevin off this week. Our producer, Jonathan Schaefer. And we bring in one of our favorites. He's not just the publisher and the boss of BallQuest. He's running his empire on his farm, Brent Hubbs. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. It looks like I'm doing the Blair Witch Project for you this morning. So hope I don't give anybody a headache on the video feed to you guys this morning. Hope everybody's doing well.
Yeah, when I get off the air, I watch Netflix or do something, not exactly productive. Hubbard runs his farm besides what he does with BallQuest. So that's why he has an empire.
Yeah.
Anyway.
An empire that needs football this fall.
It does, definitely. Brent, Charlie Daniels passed away a few days ago, the music legend. But he also had a pretty profound connection with the University of Tennessee. Talk about that. His relationship with Philip Fulmer was pretty close. He had a lot of associations there.
Well, he loved Tennessee football as a fan, first and foremost. And he, as an artist, you know, he would come to games and sit in the stands. You know, he didn't come to the game and say, "Hey, put me in the skybox." He would get in the stands. He had a son who went to Tennessee, and he got to know Coach Fulmer. They did a lot together through the Jason Foundation there in Nashville, which is a great organization in an effort to try to prevent teen suicide. And Charlie Daniels loved people. He loved Tennessee football. He loved his country. And he loved to play music. And sometimes you're not sure what order those were in, but those were the mainstays of his life. And, you know, because of that, Coach Fulmer had developed some friendships, and he enjoyed hanging out with people in the athletic department and talking to them, and he performed at Tennessee games. But, you know, he just loved Tennessee sports. He loved Tennessee football and was just a fantastic person.
Talking about the Vols, the Jay Graham show cause penalty, how does that affect his role at Tennessee?
I don't think it affects it in any way, shape, or form. I'm a little bit surprised the term show cause got used, to be honest with you, Bart, because when you think of the word show cause, it means you can't coach.
Yeah.
You're suspended from coaching. And that's the furthest thing from what's going on with Jay Graham. Jay Graham has recruiting restrictions on him, and the biggest is he can't go in a home in December. He can't make an in-home visit. I think he's going to be able to go out and evaluate on Friday nights, but he's not going to be making in-home visits in 3 weeks during the month of December, and that's going to be the extent of his punishment. And, Jay has not come out and said anything. I think Jay's kind of disappointed in the way some of that was portrayed. Even from the release standpoint from Texas A&M, but that's part of the business, and Jay understands that, and I know Jay's trying to move on. Tennessee's fully aware of it. It does not affect him coaching at Tennessee in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, today we expect that the Ivy League will decide to play football in the spring. Do you think there's going to be a domino effect?
I think maybe some other conferences do that. I don't think it's going to have a domino effect right now on the Power Five. Now, if Power Five ends up doing something in the spring, I don't think anybody can come back and say, well, they're doing it because the Ivy League did it. But I think the Power Five's deal is they're trying to slow play this thing as long as they can, see what it looks like day to day, see what it looks like week to week. And hold out for as long as they can, to the point that maybe they come back and say, hey, we're going to cancel, or we're going to push week one back, you know, or we're going to alter the calendar that way. They're going to do everything in the Power Five, Mark, that they can to keep football in the fall. There's real concerns from the Power Five standpoint about football in the spring because of other sports involved. And most importantly, how's the NFL going to adjust its calendar? If you're playing Power Five football in the spring, is the NFL going to say, hey, we're going to push the draft back, we're going to push the combine back? And then how many of those Power Five kids are going to play? Would Trey Smith play this year, or would he set out and get ready for the draft? Same for Trevor Lawrence. Same for Justin Fields. And we can go on and on and on. I think draft-eligible guys would have a very difficult decision to make, because is it worth the risk right up on the heels of the combine and the draft to take a chance on an injury. Okay? Because are you going, where's your draft stock going to be if you've got a shoulder injury if you're a running back or an offensive lineman? So I just think that there's a lot of concerns and a lot of issues with it being in the spring that the Power Five does not want to go down that road if they can avoid it. At the same time, too, there's some non-Power Five, I guess the Group of Five conferences, who I'm told have had discussions about what spring would look like and have that much more of a contingency plan right now than maybe some of the Power Fives do. Now, maybe Power Fives have it. They just don't want to say that they have a contingency plan there. But I think Power Five is going to hold out for the fall as long as they can.
We're speaking to Brent Hubbs from VolQuest.com.
Well, Brent, since we're talking about maybe not having the season or moving it to the spring, what kind of impact, I guess money-wise, economically, will that have on UT and most universities where football is king?
Well, they got to play. And, I think that's why, even though nobody wants the spring option, if that's the only option, then somebody's going to make that option work because they've got to have the resources. They've got to have the finances to do that. To make the athletic departments, function. Sports are handled by football in a lot of ways. The non-revenue sports are paid by football. So I just think that you've got to try to find a way to make it work. And again, nobody wants to do that in the spring, but at the same time too, you got to have a revenue stream coming in. If you don't have a revenue stream coming in, I don't know how you're going to function. How do you pay for these other sports when you're not making football money? Now, part of this goes back particularly for the non-Power Five schools, hey, can I get some fans in the stands? Because the ticket revenue for those schools are very important because they don't have the TV deal with the SEC Network and they don't have the TV payouts that some of the Power Five schools have. So fans in the stands for those schools are really, really important and going to be really significant. So lots of decisions, lots of discussions are having to take place over the next couple of weeks. Everybody's hoping that the sort of the worm turns in a positive way. But right now there's much more doubt than there's been since probably March or April regarding football.
Well, I guess in a good light, I guess Banks is back into the fold, or I guess kind of give the extent of where he's at with UT, maybe with the university, and maybe not necessarily yet with the football team.
Well, he's back with the university. He's in school. Okay. This is all part of the plan. I'm going to go to summer school in the second session and online, and then is enrolled for the fall. And I think it's just a matter of time before he's back with the football program officially, but he's got to take care of business here the next few weeks, and I think Jeremy's done a good job. I think he's learned from what he's done. I'm not saying he's suddenly perfect. None of us are, but I think he has worked hard on his image, but more importantly, he's worked hard on his temperament and his attitude towards people and how he's dealt with people. He's done a lot in the community that nobody knows about. He's not bragged about it. He's not tried to use different platforms to show, hey, this is what I'm doing. Look at this. He's just gone about his business that way. And I'll give Jeremy Pruitt a ton of credit for this. Not for getting him back as a football player, but, obviously that's part of it. That's why Jeremy Pruitt's doing this because, he wants and needs Jeremy Pruitt on his team. But he's worried about Jeremy Banks as a human being and has spent a lot of time with him in conversation long before it was ever thought he might come back to school as a football player to ensure that that kid was going to have a chance at a successful future. Invested a ton of time in him personally helping him grow. And I think it's going to pay off for him.
Man, I know we've lost sight of it. If there is a season, and now that all this time has been missed, is JG just kind of, the quarterback, Garantano, really, it's not going to even be a quarterback battle unless, he does something horrible in games where he looks like he has improved with his second season with Chaney as offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I think it's hard to see anything other than Garantano starting the season because you missed all of spring. This is going to look different. I mean, look, this staff is yet to see Harrison Bailey in a scrimmage setting at the college level.
Right.
And so, I know everybody's fired up about the five-star, and I'm not saying he can't play because I don't have any idea. I mean, he should be able to. He's highly regarded. But he's a guy who, did not get the opportunity to capitalize on being an early enrollee. And I think that has to set him back in terms of the competition. Where's their trust level with Brian Maurer? It wasn't very high at the end of the season, which is why he got pulled in the bowl game after just a couple of series. So I think right now it's JG's. If he doesn't play well, they'll make a change. They've already shown that they're not afraid to mix that up there. But I think it's going to start on JG.
No doubt about it. We're on with Brent Hubbs with VolQuest.com. Mark?
Brent, I was amused when I heard this. I'm pretty sure you did too. Over the years, Paul Feinbaum has called Philip Fulmer a lot of names that we can't use on the air. But what about his pronouncement that Fulmer saved the football program, stepping in through that whole John Curry fiasco and really, saved the day by hiring Jeremy Pruitt?
Well, I mean, I think that's a hot take. I think what Jeremy Pruitt did with this team down the stretch last season was very good. I think Jeremy Pruitt's changing the culture in his program. I think they're improving their talent level. And I'm not knocking Jeremy Pruitt. He also lost to Georgia State and BYU last year.
Yes, he did.
To pronounce it saved, but because of that, it's probably a stretch. Does it help the football program that a football guy is in charge of the athletic department who understands the challenges of Tennessee football? I would say yes, it does. But I think it's probably premature to declare Phillip as the savior to Tennessee football just yet. Now, they go out and win 9 or 10 games this year. You probably make that pronouncement a little better. But, this is a program that was down 2 scores to Indiana with less than 4 minutes to play. They had to have a goal line stand against Kentucky to get bowl eligible. Now, that's not to say they didn't go out and earn it because they went out and got the job done. But I think we're a little premature in pronouncing something as saved and back or somebody as the savior of it.
Well said. Absolutely. We've seen around the country, Clemson, LSU, a lot of schools shutting down even the workouts because their COVID numbers right now are alarmingly high. Why has it worked so well at Tennessee?
Well, I think Tennessee's players, a lot of people want to give credit to the administration, and I think, they did a good job, with early testing and everything when guys came back. But I think you got to give the players credit. We hear stories at LSU and at Ole Miss that an outbreak occurred because, the defensive back room was playing a poker game in somebody's apartment. At Kansas State, they had an outbreak because a bunch of guys went to a guy's lake house for the weekend. And they all gathered, closely. I think Tennessee's players have been smart enough to do that now, or to avoid that. Now, they're testing this week. It's hard to believe and hard to think that they would not have a positive somewhere along the way here with this next round of testing. I thought a significant notion that came out on social media last night, I don't remember who tweeted it out, to be honest with you, is the thought process in terms of testing doing what the PGA Tour is doing, and that is the repetitive testing, because the PGA Tour has dealt with some false negatives. And so, they test a guy on Monday, and then all of a sudden he can't play in a tournament for 2 weeks, and the guy says, I have no symptoms. What the PGA Tour is doing is they're going to come back and test him the next couple, 3 days. If that person tests negative, then he can play on the weekend. That could be significant for football. For the NFL and for college football, because the idea has been if you test positive, then you're out that week and maybe you're out 2 weeks. But if it's, if it's a false positive, which we're seeing some of those out there apparently, and you retest somebody 3 days in a row and they don't have they don't test positive, it's a negative test, then maybe they can play on Saturday. And so the idea of this forfeiture that people have thrown out there may end up not being the case if we get to football. We'll see. I think Major League Soccer had to forfeit a game and sent Dallas home because they had a bunch of tests. So all pro teams, all sports teams are trying to figure out what to do today. And they're going to try to figure out what to do tomorrow based on new information. And it's going to be this way for the rest of the month. But to borrow the Tom Hanks line, you know, the earth's getting bigger in the window, meaning you're going to have to make a decision sooner rather than later. And I think come late July, into July, we're going to have some decisions. And, you know, here, you know, at the state level, we'll see what the TSSAA does here in another couple of hours when they meet and try to figure out what their fall is going to look like.
Mm. Have we hit the crazy period yet? With transfers, especially with no, you know, in-person visits?
You know, I think we've hit the period crazy from the standpoint of a lot of guys don't have a home, you know. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, too. If you take a grad transfer, you have room to take a grad transfer, or you take a transfer, he's got to count as one of your 25. Okay, well, let's say you take a grad transfer this fall to count as one of your 25 and you don't play football. Now you've given a scholarship away for your next recruiting class. So I think right now coaches are more in a whole pat situation with transfers and not taking guys right now. So I think you've got a bunch of guys in the portal who don't have a new home at this point in time, because I think all that's on hold as everybody waits to see what a football season looks or doesn't look like this fall or spring.
We're speaking of Brent Hubbs from VolQuest.com.
Well, Brent, for me, I guess I only have one question here to finish up, and that is, if they don't play their first game, and that's UT, of course, since you're on VolQuest.com, and I think it's against Charlotte, if I could think of, what are the ramifications financially if they don't play that game? Will they still have to give them some sort of money with a canceled game, or is it because the season is delayed push back? What are, I guess, the contractual obligations for Tennessee and other schools that are in that same situation? Do you know?
Well, I think in most cases, and I don't know that specific game, but I know in a lot of cases, the way that contract's written is it's written is in there if there's an act of God,
right,
meaning we can't play the game because of a hurricane or something like that, then that contract is null and void. So you wouldn't own them. You wouldn't owe them any money if you don't play the game. I know this, there was talk, and there has been some talk, about if you can't have fans in the stands, are schools going to pay? I think Georgia would owe ETSU $500,000 to play that game. Would they pay full on that with no fans in the stands, because they're not going to get the money back on that, or would they just pay travel expenses? Well, if they just paid travel expenses, do those schools like ETSU and that level of school, do they want to play those games, get their kids beat up if they're not getting a big, you know, a big paycheck? Because that $500,000 is very important to their budget.
Yes.
And so they need games with fans in the stands, not just for them, you know, for their travel games against big name opponents, but also for their home season, because they don't have those TV deals. So, again, you know, right now we can all speculate. Nobody's got the confidence about football this fall that they had 6 weeks ago. You know, maybe everybody's still holding that hope. I'm still holding that hope, but I don't think anybody in good conscience can say, yeah, I feel as confident about it as I did in the middle of June or the 1st of June. I don't see any way you can feel that way right now. So what the next 2 weeks look like, we don't know. We'll just have to wait and see and hope that it gets better for sports, hope that it gets better for, you know, universities who have to make critical decisions about bringing students back, and hopefully it gets better for everybody out there who is dealing with this right now.
Brent, great stuff as always. Good luck with the produce, and we'll speak to you next week, bud.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it,
buddy.
All right. Brent Hubbs from VolQuest.com, working hard while doing this show. He can multitask like nobody's business. All right. Straight ahead. Guess who topped the list of earning the most money in NFL marketing and royalties? You might be surprised. 8:38 in the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone.